have our blood mixed with his inferior freak fluids.
Demerits, raise your hand.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Back in My Day podcast. My name is Michael Power, and once again, I have the power because our regular host, David Petrangelo, could not be here today, but I'm lucky to be joined by two excellent, wonderful co-hosts, my regular co-host,
Ian Walter,
and a very special guest. Welcome back on the podcast.
Wife Power. Actually, no, it is not Wife Power. We love Wife Power. It's Mike, ex-Multiverse of Madness guy. Mike. How you guys doing? This is going to be fun. I'm geeked.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on, Mike. Again, we love having you.
That's great, right, to catch up. Normally we have Mike Power's wife, but this time I thought I'd bring my wife along.
I love me some Ian. So.
Wife Walter.
That's funny.
All right, so Back in My Day podcast, the podcast where the not-so-stereotypical millennials like to look back on the things they loved when they were children and how it relates to today. And so if you're following the show, we're talking about one of the biggest things from our childhood that's happening right now, coming out today, is the sequel series to X-Men, the animated series. One of our favorite shows on the podcast, meant a lot to us growing up. And it's been not a reboot. It's really just a sequel. It's back. The 90s are back in 2024. Which is great for our podcast, and we've been loving the show. We've been following along. I hope you've been following along. We've been reviewing all the episodes, and now, today, we're going to be covering episode 5, Remember It, and episode 6, Life Death Part 2. So before we get into the two episodes, Mikey, why don't we go over to you, and how have you been enjoying the show so far? The first four episodes before we get into the last two. And what is your relationship with X-Men, the animated series?
You know what? I don't have much of a relationship with the animated series of X-Men because when it came out, I was already in college and shit. So, you know, I went through my comic book phase early. I think like we've discussed on your show originally, mm-hmm. Back when I was a Whack Bracketsman and not so much a Multiverse of Badness guy. But I kind of missed the first go around with the animated series. So this is kind of the first go around I've had. And it's been really shockingly deep. I expected it to be like a kid's cartoon kind of okay.
That's the best part about it.
Yeah, but then the second or third episode where I think it was the second episode, but yeah, it's like with, you know, the Goblin Queen, and it's like that was just straight up a horror movie. It was like a psychological thriller. It's like, what the hell is going on here, man? I'm scared to death of this show.
Yeah, I mean,
it's pretty wild.
It's awesome. Like, I remember the reason the show meant so much to me is that when I was a kid, the show blew me away. It was a kid's show. It was talking to kids, but not in a kid way, in a very adult way. It wasn't talking down to audience at all, even though it was a show made for, you know, 10-year-old kids on Saturday morning. And we loved it for it. And the show has actually even aged up even more as now it's released now. I think they know their primary target audience is those kids that grew up with the show from the 90s. So it's a little bit bloodier. It's a little bit scarier. It's a little bit darker, but it still is a great tribute. It still has all the things in the original show that we love. So I'm really glad you're enjoying it. As someone that never watched the original, that's good to know that it holds up for someone who hasn't seen the original series. It's not just the nostalgia glasses that are, you know, making the show go so great through our eyes. So yeah, that's good. It's good to hear.
Yeah. Again, it's just been crazy. Well, you know, obviously the next couple episodes we'll get into, but yeah, it's just, you know, I want to say that like we were talking about the whole like pregnancy angle. I mean, that's pretty deep for a kid's show. You know, you got Cyclops, like pretty much like turning on the woman that he's like, you know, had a baby with. He's like, oh, you're fake now. It's like, dude, you're still the same dick I remember. You know, Scott Summers, man. He's just an awful human being.
Yeah, you obviously know the X-Men well from the comics, having your own comic book podcast and being a fan, as you mentioned. And so the show, it mines from a lot of the classic X-Men story. So if you were a reader of the comics, which you said you were back before the show, are you recognizing a lot of the stories that you read and a lot of the characterizations and everything?
The characterizations, yes. Oddly enough, like the, you know, the Goblin Queen stuff, it picks up some right when I was dropping. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that does disappoint me, and it's probably broke Stu's heart, is the, you know, they retcon Jubilee's backstory. I wanted to see the M Squad, and they're like, you know, the Sentinels. I was like, no, it was the M Squad. It's this bunch of ridiculous guys. Dazzler and Storm went off to like a strip bar in a mall and found Jubilee. It was just that's one of my favorite like stories in the X-Men. One of my favorite introductions of a character.
Yeah,
well, you covered it on Multiverse of Madness.
I did, you know? With Sue, of course.
There you go.
Hey, there's still time. There's going to be more seasons of X-Men to come. They can go back and you know, retcon a little Jubilee origin story. This is comics.
This is comics, and but they are doing a really good job of like. You know, even some of the stuff I've missed along the way, I can tell they're changing things. They're kind of like, you know, merging two storylines together, but they don't have a lot of time. If anything, it's a, and we'll talk about this obviously with 5 and 6, but sometimes I think they're moving too fast for their own good.
Yeah, I would agree because
it's a double-edged sword for sure.
It's hard. You know, I mean, they're doing a very admirable job, but there are some things that you can tell they're having to make hard cuts and decisions, and they're leaving a little bit of meat on the floor.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, let's jump into the episodes, Ian. Let's start with the episode that broke the internet. Episode 5. Seriously. Remember it.
All right. Okay. Well, you know what? To be honest, I was kind of hoping, you know, I was thinking, wouldn't it be great if we could cover these in reverse order? Because this is clearly the one we're all here to talk about. Because it was so, I don't know about you, Mikey, but it was so monumental. Like, I found when the credits rolled on this episode, I sat back and went, that was the best episode of X-Men, the animated series, like point blank. And like, maybe even the best episode of a Marvel show. Like, it was really good. But
yeah,
like,
of a Marvel show on Disney Plus. It's up there. It's in the conversation for sure.
Remember it. I mean, this is a line from Gambit. We get the previously on, which has traditionally been a Cyclops thing, is being delivered by Gambit when we start this episode 5. Now we're starting we're closing, I guess, the first half of this debut season or this comeback season of X-Men 97, and it's all like kind of fun. The first half of the episode, it kind of like, do you want to just like recap the episode and then we'll talk about what stood out, or
maybe we basically broadly go through the beats?
So basically, like, it's building to this arrival on Genosha. You know, they welcomed Genosha into the UN, and Gambit, Magneto, and Rogue, of course, the love triangle, are heading there to kind of oversee its like induction. And then, you know, they follow up by asking Magneto to be the leader of the nation, right? So so there's the whole drama angle of, like, we've been building towards this, like, Gambit realizes there's something going on between Rogue and Magneto, and there's this whole thing where Rogue is kind of caught between two worlds because she loves Gambit but is never able to touch him. She's has this pre-existing relationship with Magneto and is able to touch him because of his electromagnetic field. So there's a lot going on with them, and you know, maybe I'll take a pause because we're building up to this big moment. But what did you guys think of the gala, the way this they introduced Genosha? There's a lot of cameos of mutants. And then we kind of build to this gala where Rogue and Magneto start to dance with one another.
Yeah, I loved all of the cameos. You would just pick them up. I tell you, I was hoping that Soft Serve would be there. I was waiting around. You know who Soft Serve is, don't you?
Glob?
She's actually a mutant. Oh. She's an X-Men. It was kind of like a joke X-Men that somebody made where she poops ice cream.
Oh,
she
really?
Actually, she makes an appearance. No. She makes an appearance in one of the comic books. Yeah, I'm pretty sure her name's Soft Serve. So I kept looking for a girl with an ice cream cone and I never found it. But
well, are you kidding me though? There's the scene where someone's getting ice cream and then it comes out of her hand.
No, that's not. She poops ice cream though. So, yeah. So maybe that maybe that's kind of a wink nudge.
She plus, sounds like a Grant Morrison invention.
You know, I bet you that. You know what? I remember that scene, but for some reason, I saw it come out of a hand. I didn't put two. I bet you that is a callback to Soft Serve. It almost
maybe,
has
maybe
to
the
be.
Hand. Maybe the hand came from. Ooh.
This is a kid's. This is a kid's podcast. Ian's getting off the rails.
Some chocolate covered pretzels.
Oh gosh, but no, all the cameos are fabulous and it was great. Everybody's having a good time. Mutants are happy. I mean, you never see them smile this much. They went from being this vilified race of people to having their own homeland. They have their own culture. They're doing their own dances. They're going to have their own nation. The Goblin Queen's found a place that she can go in and be cool. And, you know, she found a home. Everything is just going swimmingly well for these people in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, As a comic book reader, nothing bad can happen to Genosha, right? It's always going to end up well there, and X-Men are going to be or mutants are going to be happily ever after. But no, it was a great setup, and I loved all the cameos. I love seeing Nightcrawler number one.
Oh yeah,
always a blast.
He's always the best.
When they pan through those scenes, you're talking about Glob and Exodus and all these characters and Multiple Man and like the Leo meme pointing at the TV, like oh that. That's a reference. That's a reference. Like it was so cool. It was great. And you know, the White Queen and Council and the Romeo the Hellfire Gala and everything. So it was just a lot of fun and it was flying by and it didn't want to end. And then
Well, and also on the X-Men like X side of things, X Mansion, mm-hmm. everything, they're like building up to this moment as well by having like, you know, televised like
like being a dick to a reporter. Yeah.
That was great though. I really like the writing of this series. I really like that Cyclops seems to have a lot better writing, I think, from what we were used to in the previous five seasons. I think like he's got a lot more moments to really showcase his emotions and stuff like that.
A lot more opportunity to show the world what a dick he is.
Yeah, well, which is fair, but I think like that's even an angle that they might be playing up as they build out this season. So I just think it's cool to see him actually, you know, use his backbone that we've seen in the comics. Like
you push the Boy Scout too far, you know. Yeah. This is like what they're doing to Cyclops. It's like this is look what he's gone through. This is not the time to put him on TV with like someone asking all these hard, tough questions, right? He's like just found out that his baby mama was a clone of the woman he loves and had to give up his son to the because sister gave him a techno virus of the future and all that's crazy. But no, it was well done though. It was well done to be cutting between the two, the interview and you know the interview beast too, and what was happening in a Genosha was kind of like a good way to do exposition.
Yeah, and then speaking of Madeline Pryor, she resurfaced real quick after the events.
I didn't expect to see her so soon.
So, Mikey, how did you feel about the whole clone saga and like how you know her angle in this whole story?
Like I said, this feels a little shoehorned in. I mean, like we said, you know, she's going to go off and find her own way. You know, I guess in a way she's a mutant. So yeah, maybe it makes sense. But I think like Mike was saying, I think it fell a little flat in the fact that, you know, oh, I'm going to wander the earth and find out who I am. Oh, I figured it out two episodes later and here I am. You get to see me again. It was a little too much too fast. I would have liked to see her gone for a little while longer, but I get why they did it. I mean, obviously they're more talented writers than I am. So it's just one of those deals where, it felt like I felt like they were pushing the throttle a little fast to bring her back that fast.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing for an X-Men animated series fan like myself is that as much as they're packing in, and I actually think that on the flip side, it's cool to see how much they can pack into one episode each week to week. But the fact that Cable shows up, and this is basically like they've been building out his origin, even though we've seen him in previous seasons of the animated series, but now we actually know for a fact, like they've shown us through these episodes, like where he comes from and everything with Madeline Pryor and Scott Summers. But now he shows up to warn her, but he's too late. And, you know, we have that dance with Rogue and Magneto and the whole thing where Rogue thought she got what she wanted, but she actually seemingly chooses Gambit over Magneto by the end of the dance. When the music was happening, though, I had to actually look this up just now because my initial reaction was, I love how they've gone and even made the music seem like it's from 97. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I was like, wow, the music right now is like pure Dance Mix 97 or whatever it is. But when I look it up, that is an Ace of Base song that actually came out in 93. Debuted actually in December, their single on December 7, 92 called Happy Nation. I thought that was a song they made for the show, but it was actually an Ace of Base song from 92. So I was vibing along to it. And then of course, you know, Too Good to Be True, no such thing as a free lunch in Genosha. Surprise Attack comes from, I guess, Godzilla Sentinel, the creation of Master Mold, and some ungodly, you know.
Yeah, it was like a bug. Had like a bug. Before we get to that, I just want to talk about the dance, because Wife Power, mentioned on the show already, is a huge fan of the Rogue and Gambit. And whenever they were Love Story. And when they were showing the Magneto and Rogue like backstory, and then the dance, did anyone else get like the ick from that? Like, you know, like he was so much older than her.
Yeah. That always bothers me. It's just,
I know they have a thing in the comics and everything, but
yeah. Well, the comics are full with a bunch of stuff that'll give you the ick if you see it play out. I mean, let's just be honest here. So yeah, it did. It was just a little.
He seemed
icky.
Like grandpa. Like, I know they made him all zaddy and sexy in this series now, but
I think you're right. Everyone wants to see Rogue and Gambit, right? This is kind of just an
obstacle.
Maybe
it was on purpose.
But at the same time, I think the ick for me comes from, it's not even fair to the cartoon, like the self-contained series. It's because in X-Men in 2000, it's like she's a little girl and he's an old man and like he's kidnapping her. And like, so it's like...
Yeah,
so
their relationship, it wasn't... Yeah, it was just kind of came out of nowhere to you anyways. But it made for good... drama and tension and love triangle. So
and by the way, this gala, when they pan over to it, did anyone notice anything crazy about the stars?
Oh yeah, the Watchers.
Uatu is watching the whole thing. That. So it's like, you know, he's straight out of What If, you know, straight out of the comics, but like it's kind of tying the whole, like, you know, greater multiverse of the MCU together by bringing him in there, right, in that moment. So it's kind of cool to see that he's watching. This is like one of the events that, you know, it's must-see TV, I guess.
I just think they did Dazzler a disservice. She should have been the one performing.
Yeah,
she's
only
an X-Man. She's a mutant. She's there. I would prefer to see Nightcat perform, but she's not a mutant. She's not going to be there. But Dazzler's going to be there. So, yeah, let Dazzler perform. And they took Dazzler's moment of glory away from him. I was disappointed.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see more of her. Okay, and so, yeah, let's...
We got a brief return of the Morlocks, and then all of a sudden this devastating ambush, like I already just mentioned. It's this massive Godzilla-like sentinel that has these really super advanced, powerful green death rays. Could just obliterate Genosha and obliterate its inhabitants. So it was quite the turn, and it kind of sets up this whole third act of the episode. And it's basically every man for himself. You know, everyone's running for their lives. Most mutants are getting obliterated. And so Magneto turns to his X-Men and decides, you know, let's save everyone we can, because we don't want to look back on this day and say, oh, we could have saved more or whatever. So everyone goes, you know, everyone who's still alive basically gets into the fight. You know, Rogue, Gambit.
It's mostly Rogue, Gambit, Magneto, though. Magneto, they really steal the show, especially Gambit on that
motorcycle. The people
motorcycle.
That showed up, the X-Men that showed up.
Yeah,
the party,
bothered to show up.
I mean, the body count in this was crazy high off the shoot. It's like, you look around, it's like, oh, yeah, he just killed everybody. So there's like nobody left to fight. And I guess most of them don't even know how to fight. So, you're going to leave it up to the X-Men here.
Yeah, for sure.
So
many
great
moments,
really great.
Though. Yeah, the action was great. Gambit on a motorcycle was awesome. I know, like, this is the very common trope, I guess, in movies and TV, which is like right before you kill off a character, you give them something really cool to do in badass scenes. So, if you're sort of paying attention, you could figure, like, okay, this is a real show, Gambit showcase. that could not mean good things, but. It was definitely well done, the action.
Yeah. So from start to finish to roll credits, this episode is just basically them trying to stop the Sentinels and somehow make it out alive. And then of course the big tragic ending is that Gambit goes up against him when they think all hope is lost. he does get stabbed, but he's able to ignite, you know, the Godzilla Sentinel and blow up the entire thing.
And in the end, he sacrificed himself to save Rogue, right? Himself. Because Magneto sacrificed himself to save the Morlocks and Leech.
Although they seemingly got destroyed too.
Like, yes. Right. Oh yeah. So, that's true. He didn't really save them. He sacrificed. Yeah. He died with them.
Yeah. And in Germany, he says, "Don't be afraid." So maybe we'll see them again. So we'll, I don't know. Who knows? But it's a sad final shot of Rogue sitting over Gambit saying, "I can't feel you." So Gambit, his heroic last words were, "The name is Gambit, mon ami, remember it." Title of the episode. Great line. He said that in the end of season two as well, finale. So that was a great callback to that. And then, so this is the big tragedy, is that Rogue finally chooses Gambit over Magneto, although he died not really knowing that she had done that. They get to team up, have one last great moment together fighting. And then we've lost Gambit, I think, has been confirmed basically by the showrunners. What's his name again? Bo DeMeo. Been talking about it. Even though he's no longer with the series, he's been online talking about his, the best moments and stuff like that from it. So, very sad ending the episode. Most episodes have a twist. I'd say that's the biggest one we've got yet. And like I said, it's my favorite episode to date. So it's pretty wild. Like, I want to know overall, what were you thinking heading into episode 6? Like, before we start talking about where we went from here, like, what were your thoughts?
One question I had is, because you said obviously Gambit was confirmed and he was confirmed live on the show, but I'm afraid this is going to be a Walking Dead moment because that's going to lead into a statement in episode 6, but episode 5, I don't recall seeing Magneto's body. So I think if you don't see the actual body, you have to consider them alive until proven otherwise.
That's a great point. And also, I think I would normally have an issue with them doing the way that they did and bringing Magneto back. But because we got Gambit, and that big moment from Gambit, I'd be okay to see Magneto pop up again.
Sure. Yeah, I would be too. I mean, and that's the thing. But I'm not ruling Magneto out of here yet. But yeah, Gambit was definitely dead. It was definitely a bit of a shocker with the body count that was already done. I mean, it was easy to kill a bunch of mutants. Nobody, you know, just kind of like casual cameos. Nobody cares. Even if they were real X-Men, nobody cared about 90% of them. You know, some of those guys were just bums. Nightcrawler looks like he may have made it through, thankfully. It was definitely a lot of gravity. Again, back to what we were talking about with episode, you know, the early episodes. This is heavy shit, man. I mean, this is not a kid's show.
I would agree.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, it was
They're
good.
Counting on we watched it when we were kids and we're going to tune in 30 years later, basically.
Are you watching with your kids still, Power?
No, not my kids. They're a bit too young. Yeah. I will one day, but not this. They're still on the Paw Patrol and all that crap. No one's dying in those, but no. I'm counting the day so I can show my kids these. I've sort of showed them some of the early, like, young for kid Marvel shows, and they love them. So I know that it's going to be fun when time comes.
Right.
Still under 5. They're still both under 5, so.
Yeah. Well, I made the mistake of letting my daughter watch a bunch of SpongeBob when she was a kid, but SpongeBob, you'd be surprised. There's been some crazy episodes where he and Squidward would kidnap the guy and threw him in a trunk and buried him alive. So yeah, I mean, you can find some weird SpongeBob episodes.
Oh, it's how you watch Ren and Stimpy.
That's right. Oh, man. Don't get me started there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the one thing I wanted to bring up is that this episode is an adaptation of a comic book that when we did our trailer talk, when we talked about the original the trailer for this series when it came out, we sort of speculated what comic book storylines and what's on our wish list for them to adapt. And I did mention that I would love if they adapted Grant Morrison's new X-Men run, which is one of my favorite X-Men runs, and called E for Extinction.
E for Extinction.
And famously in those early issues, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely did, this is an adaptation of one of those issues where the Sentinels attack Genosha. It's not one for one adaptation, but it's a loose adaptation. Clearly, you know, it's a lot of the same beats. It's not quite the same characters because the show kind of had some continuity at this point than the comic book did, but it's definitely an adaptation of that and a lot of the same imagery with the Sentinels attacking Genosha and everything. So I really, really like that. And I'm really happy to see that they're sort of, not happy to see, but it looks like they're sort of moving on a little bit from the Claremont era and starting to pull in other stories and ideas from the comics. So that's really cool to see. So it's my favorite part about the show is seeing what X-Men comics that I love that they're adapting to the continuity of the show. So it was really, really cool to see that. And I hope they go with it and give us like more of that Morrison Quitely new X-Men run, because there's a lot to mine. There's a lot of cool characters that Grant Morrison created for that run. So I'm excited. I'm really, really excited to see where it's going to go in the next few episodes.
And I think, like you mentioned, speculation, and Mike, you had said, well, you know, you don't see, good point about not seeing a body of the Magneto. We could see him again. I think it's funny because it's comics, so we could realistically see anybody again at any time. But I think like it's important for them to establish stakes and to not walk back every little single thing they do. That being said, you know, if we were to speculate, are we ever going to see Gambit again? I would say down the line, probably not even in this season. Like if they continue with follow-up seasons and we get like maybe an Apocalypse storyline, I would love to see him maybe being one of the Four Horsemen. That'd be a great way to bring Gambit back. Yes, but there's always a way with like the timey-wimey stuff. But I think that's why it's important in this episode that they had Cable trying to get back and failing, because they're basically saying like it doesn't always work. Mm-hmm. So that was a great little touch to the episode too. And there's just like this overarching thing with like the Cable storyline that's going to come into play, I'm guessing, by the end of the season. So
yeah,
it's a good through line too. Yeah. So Mikey, do you have any speculation going out of this kind of tragic ending and heading into, we'll talk about episode 6, but did you have any speculation about these events for like maybe the end of the season?
You know what? I would say this, we'll talk about some of that in episode 6 because I don't know, as fast as everything was moving, I thought we would see Magneto again, almost like immediately, just because I figured, oh, you know, they'll dig him out of the rubble. There he is. It's Magneto. You're not going to kill him. I mean, he is Magneto. He's not some bum mutant. He's not going to die easy. But yeah, it's just as far as speculation, there's so much moving so fast and so many storylines, a lot of them that I don't have a lot of familiarity with anyway. So in a way, it's refreshing just to see where it goes and see how they take things that I am familiar with and kind of like merge them with things that I'm not. Obviously.
That's a great point. That's what I love about the show, because as much as I love the source material in the comics, I like to see the creators of this show take a cool story from the comics and sort of adapt it into this continuity they created for the show. It doesn't have to be exact, but a loose adaptation and getting the sort of the feeling right of the story and the, just like the high level beats and then fitting it into what they've done on the show. That's the best part of the show for me. I love that.
Yeah. The kind of like the mishmashing of things where you're not exactly sure, you know, what's going to happen. And I do think especially the Gambit death, because I didn't see the first X-Men series, but they were doing a really impressive job of like imposing on us that he's one of the main characters. Even, you know, I think early on they were giving us a whole bunch of Jubilee, and she feels like she's, you know, kind of gone by the wayside in some of these other episodes, and they've kind of like shelved her. But Gambit's kind of got a pretty straight through, where he's in a lot of shit, and especially in this story, you know, he's being heroic and he's got the love triangle with Rogue and Magneto, and yeah, he's really important. It's like, oh, he's dead. So yeah, that was a shocker for me. So I'm you know, the gravity, as you guys were talking about, and it was fun to it's fun to see what they're doing. Like you said, as long as that's the same mouthfeel, I'm here for it.
Mouthfeel. But yeah, so it's a good thing you mentioned gravity. We're going to start talking about some zero gravity as we head into the next episode. So episode 6 is Life, Death, Part 2. And it's a great point you just made, Mikey, about Gambit and how he was so integral to the series, and now he's gone. We have some big surprises coming up in episode 6. So the way the episode kind of cut back and forth between two stories, I'm surprised it actually didn't have a hybrid title like the other Life, Death, Part 1.
Yeah, me too.
Like the second half of like the Jubilee story. So with Motendo. But this one just called Life, Death, Part 2. And what I'm going to do is let's break it up. Let's do the Space and Shi'ar storyline. And then we'll talk about how Life, Death, Part 2 wrapped up after that. So we have a surprise right off the bat. We're just talking about mourning the loss of Gambit. We, as traditional X-Men, the animated series fans, we've known that like they left it as a cliffhanger in season 5 with Professor X. When X-Men 97 comes out, technically season six, they really were playing it up in the marketing that like Professor X is gone. But really, he's off in space with Lilandra, and we just don't know what really happened and what became of that. Now it's a year later, surprise, surprise, we're right in it with Professor X storyline and you know, the back half of this season, which is great. I love checking in on Lilandra and Charles in space. But let's talk about it, because basically Lilandra is contacting the Kree Empire. We get a bit of a Revenge of the Sith style opening with the war in space between the Shi'ar and the Kree, and Ronan the Accuser is fighting Deathbird, and then Lilandra contacts the Kree, or not the Kree, the Shi'ar Empire, to tell the entire Empire that there's going to be an Emperor joining her at her side, and she wants to marry Professor X, Charles Xavier himself. What did you guys think? I want to hear from you, Mikey, the return of Professor X, and then Power. You must have felt waves, because, you know, that was a big plot point of season five, mm-hmm. was, you know, his departure from the show. So
I didn't see the end of season five, so I didn't have anything going into this. But yeah, as soon as I realized they were pulling the storyline away and they're not showing, you know, this strange person that she's gonna, I was like, oh yeah, it's Professor X. And of course he's walking, so you're like, oh, that can't be Professor X, but I'm like, I know it's Professor. And sure enough, it is. It was like the biggest nothing burger from a surprise standpoint that the show delivered. I was like, okay, this is pretty obvious to me, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of had a feeling he was coming back. It is comics after all. In the end of the original run of the animated series, he does quote unquote die, but he dies in a very kids cartoony way where he has some sort of like brain, you know, a psychic disease, and then he transfers his consciousness to the Shi'ar because they're maybe their future tech can save him. That's kind of how it ends in the original series. So they get to sort of have a death where he kind of leaves the earth, but you know, like in good comic book fashion, it's open for him to return anytime. So I had a feeling we would get some Professor X, but it's so well written to introduce him the episode after Magneto dies, right? Like the X-Men always have to have one of the elderly dudes there to lead them. So it's cool to catch up with him, see what he's been up to. And yeah, the love story with him and Lilandra is just fully carried over from the original series. And it's one of those like Romeo and Juliet type, they can never be happy, never be together type love stories, which is great that they stuck to that. Like, you know, it's always, you're never going to see them in a happy moment. You're always going to see them the time they broke up. So it's fitting. Right. It just works. It's just like, it just felt like a classic episode of an X-Men animated show to me.
Yeah,
at least that half of the episode.
Yeah. So basically like what he's doing is he's initially keen on kind of sticking it out with Lilandra and everything. But mm-hmm. then of course, well, first of all, it's really funny. I thought when Deathbird comes home and so this is Lilandra's sister, and their brother used to run the ship, right? Like, so Decan or whatever was like the dictator that they had to overthrow in the original animated series, and now it's Lilandra trying to do things differently. Deathbird trying to get in there and shake things up. So she's basically trying to convince everyone that Charles is just a Terran. He's no good for the Empire, and like comes up, I found it quite arbitrary, just being like, yeah, there has to be a challenge, by the way, you have to lose all of your memory of Earth and the X-Men.
Yeah, it's like the challenge is whatever challenge. I say, whatever I want it to be.
Yeah, you know, this is, I tell you what it was exactly like my son comes up to me and he'll ask me the dumbest questions, and he'll be, and he's 19, but he loves doing this. He'll be like, would you rather like eat a big pile of poop or like have to like live in a closet for a year? And it's just like, I don't have to do either of those. It felt very much like an arbitrary kind of like, and everybody's so like arbitrary. Oh, you know, she's right, yeah, let's do this. Yeah. And it's like, whatever.
It's like it's like an ancient right, but yeah, she's they're really leaning into the whole like I don't know, like mixed marriage or whatever. Like she's extremely racist against, or whatever you want to call it, against prejudice against Lilandra marrying like outside of her people, right?
It's so they're not
like,
just her, it's the entire fucking
which is like, it's like X-Men themes, right? So they're really leaning into Professor X. He's a mutant, he's from Earth, and he's marrying this alien, and they're,
and it's the literal interpretation of imperialism. Like that's
literally he's literally an outsider. He's literally not part of their race, and they have a huge problem with that. And so like they're like clearly painted as the bigots of the episode, right?
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. And then, you know, this whole thing where I love when Professor X is seeing like the anarchy that's going on and basically like, okay, I has this brilliant idea. I'm going to use my abilities to bring everyone in the astral plane and I'm going to create a classroom so we can actually
my real powers hash it out. To teach.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So we'll hash it out with the these bigots, as you called them, and we'll see if there's like any room for improvement there. But no, I like the way that he handled that, and the way that it's like, you know, he's telling them how they've been doing things one way.
It's so incredibly cheesy in an amazing way. It's like, they're just not educated enough.
Right, you know? Right.
I can educate them out of their bigotry, sort of thing.
Now, this is kind of the part where basically wrapping on the space storyline, it's basically like him teaching them and talking about the use of power and stuff like that. But then he gets like a psychic vision and he's basically seeing that, you know, he's been galvaning off in space and his X-Men and the mutants and people of Earth are dying, literally seeing like Gambit's skeleton and everything like that. So he's having this vision. It causes him to decide, nope, I can't stick it out here with Lilandra. I have to return, you know, much to her dismay. I have to go back and help my X-Men. So basically his decision to return to Earth. And that's how that storyline wrapped up. I just thought it was interesting that he's now seen like this thing with Gambit. It's like, maybe he could have reached out to them sooner. He was kind of like interested in what was going on with Lilandra. She saved him. And so interesting to hear what you guys thought about that kind of turn and now that he's coming back. Power, I'm especially curious what you thought about that end of that Professor X storyline, because basically he's getting these psychic visions. Mm-hmm. Who knows if they're going to be like coming from a malicious source, or you know what I mean? Like there was that line earlier in the episode about masking and manipulation. Like it could be something like that. So I'm curious what
that's
what
a good catch. That's a good about. Catch. And if it is, if we are getting into adapting the Grant Morrison comics, you know that there is another psychic villain that could be setting up. So that's a good catch. It could be setting up that I don't want to spoil too much, but that villain, that would be cool. The other thing that I noticed is something that Mikey pointed out, which is that you never really in TV and movies trust someone's dead unless you see the body, and we didn't see Magneto's body, so we were curious about if he's really dead. And also lending itself to that theory is that when Professor X sees a vision, he doesn't see his homeboy Magneto. You think if Magneto died, that would instantly shoot some psychic message in his brain, but he sees Gambit's body instead. So Gambit's skeleton instead. So I'm wondering if that's also hinting towards the fact that Magneto is still alive out there. Because you think with their strong connection, if something happens to Magneto, that would be the sort of shock that would send him back to Earth, right? So what do you think about that, Mikey?
I think the scene was, again, this is just straight up horror. We go from literally like Professor X being this, you know, douchey little, he's like, haha, I'm so smart. You know, I'm teaching in class. Oh my God, here's the corpse of Gambit and billions of fucking dead bodies.
Yeah.
It was just crazy to me. I was like, well, that was unexpected. That escalated quickly. So yeah, I mean, but that's the thing is like, you can never get your footing and be in a happy place in the show.
No,
because it's gonna cut you off literally at the knees, like Charles Xavier did on the board with all the other societies that they've wiped out along the way. So yeah, this is just everything is not. There's no room to breathe in this show. And the other thing that I have a problem with,
that was
with
like this, half the episode,
the end of the storyline, the last thing I have a problem with. You know what, Charles? I'm just saying this. Maybe you should let them go. Let them. You don't. It's not your job to protect these bastards. You know,
I mean, he's like, you find this one true love. Now, admittedly, she was going to make him wipe his memory for, so she's kind of a bitch anyway. Yeah. So it's like, you know what? And this guy, it's like, maybe that, maybe he's actually like trying to be polite to her and being like, yeah, you're a little too much for me. I'm going to back off, and I'm going to look like the bad guy. It's me, not you. It's totally you, gal. You were just willing to wipe my mind. So, right, and then one other thing, I think the villain you're referring to is actually supposed to be in Deadpool and Wolverine.
I heard that rumor too.
So if that's the truth, then that may be why they're holding back on that, or kind of like retconning some of that storyline. I could be wrong. So there you go.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah. I like your point of how overly dramatic X-Men is. I called it the soap opera for comic book fans.
Oh, 100.
Last episode, it's like, you have to purge all memory, like the one thing that defines you, the creator of the X-Men. And it's like, he's taking it so seriously. He's like, no, I can't forget them. No. Like,
well, yeah, I mean. Yeah.
But in his defense, he shouldn't have to.
No, I agree. He's being gaslit hard. But maybe Lilandra's in on it with her sister, you know?
But if you think about it, we separated these two parts of the episode, but there is a through line between some of the storylines in the show where it's like, you know, you're being pulled away, maybe whether you want to or not, you're being pulled away from the team. And then it's a question of like, are we a family? Like, should I always be coming back? She even mentions like, it's your family. It's going to be like a black hole. It's like,
right,
yeah. So, is it sucking but as back much in? As a, time, we, like, is that what we need? We probably need him.
Yeah.
Right?
So. As much as we're joking about, you know, whatever they're gaslighting and they're like making him forget about the X-Men and all this stuff. I am psyched and pumped for Professor X to come back and lead the X-Men. I am pumped for that. And
there you go.
And I can't deny it.
Well, it's a good point because they had the awesome intro. So we should get your take real quick on the intro, because we've been talking about this week to week now, how it was like our favorite from our childhood, and like they brought it back. And we even met Larry Houston, who's the director of the original animated series, and they consulted him on making the intro awesome. So, Mikey, what are your thoughts about the intro here for X-Men 97?
I mean, it's great. I actually like the entire animation of the show. I mean, it feels a lot. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Universal Studio, but they have a Spider-Man ride that I love. And the animation is similar to that, like when you're leading in, because it's interesting. There's a lot going on. I mean, the colors are more vibrant than the Spider-Man animation one, actually. And, you know, it's just a fun all around feel. It feels like a clean, it feels like you want to remember the 90s looking, which if you went back to the 90s, it's like, oh man, everything's just washed out and grainy. You know, nothing is as good as you remember it. But this is like, let's imagine the 90s were as good as we remember them. And this is what they've kind of put together. So I do.
You listen to our episodes.
Let's do a podcast about it, actually.
I have. But you're 100% on spot on with that. It's really, it feels right. The one thing about the intro that is too much for me that I don't keep. I'm not a nuanced guy. Like with the intros, like, oh, look at this little change. And I did see a little change in 6. It's, you know, going to probably be a change, but yeah, you know, it's too much for me to worry about. I'll just read the afterthoughts and go, oh, whatever. But
they did drop Magneto and Gambit and added Nightcrawler, which was a weird one to add, because he didn't appear in the episode at all. When I saw him in the credits, like, oh, Nightcrawler, I believe he's alive. But then he did not appear. So it's interesting.
It's like them confirming that he lived. Like,
that's all it is.
You only lost Gambit and potentially Magneto. Yeah, like, Nightcrawler too.
Yeah, I mean, they did show him in pretty bad shape. And this could be a Walking Dead kind of swerve, because if you remember, not to ruin anybody that hasn't seen The Walking Dead, but God, you've had your time. If you remember when the first time everybody thought Glenn died because he got eaten by a bunch of zombies before he got bashed in the head, it's like they took him off the credits and everybody's like, oh my God, he's really dead. But then he came back. So this, I have a feeling this is a swerve. We probably won't even see Nightcrawler. Magneto will be back next episode, because they just can't help. They can't keep anybody away very long in this show.
Oh,
apparently.
Yeah. In comics in general, right? Like, how many times have all these characters died and come back? But
We had 2 Jean Greys in the first couple of episodes this season. I mean,
but I love it. I don't mind it. I'm used to it from comics. As long as this character is sort of fundamentally changed, or he's killed for a, you know, plot reason or something, I can always get behind bringing back favorite characters. If it's not just like, oh, it's like they never died, right? It's if it was still meant something and they bring it back. Like if Gambit comes back the way Ian hinted towards Gambit coming back, would be very awesome, which has to do with apocalypse.
It would be pretty dope.
That would be the perfect way to bring him back. So like, when they do stuff like that, I really don't mind.
Yeah, the only one I definitely don't want to see anybody come back in any way, shape, or form is I saw enough of Multiple Man in the cameos to be done with it.
Multiple Man, yeah, he can stay dead.
I hope he killed every one of the fucking Multiple Men.
Oh man, no, there's one left, and then he keeps multiplying. Yeah, like rats.
He's the hardest one to kill. That's like the rats.
You know, I'm hoping that like of all the bodies Professor X saw, like 97% of them were Multiple Men.
Just all Multiple Men skeletons.
All Multiple Men. That's all they killed.
That's funny.
Well, it's an interesting concept that Madeline Pryor could be dead, and you know, that's Cable's mom, so he was basically unable to save her. So it'd be interesting to see if they stick with that. But
or if she's not dead and they replaced her with a clone, and there's going to be 3 Madeline Pryors and 2 Jean Greys. There's going to be 17 of these women running around by the end of the series.
I kind of like the way the X-Men the animated series has approached like time travel, and like they haven't done the same kind of multiverse thing that the MCU has done with the variants and everything. They've like it's been more like Back to the Future the way they do it, so it's interesting the way. But so the episode's called Life Death. It's exploring a lot of these characters who've gone and maybe will come back to the team. We have Storm. She left the team because she lost her powers. This is an adaptation, but I'll call it a loose adaptation from the comics of the Life Death storyline. We talked about Life Death Part 1. Now this is the way that they've chosen to wrap this storyline up in X-Men 97. So Mikey, were you familiar with the storyline in the comics, Uncanny X-Men 188? Or sorry,
not really. I was out of the loop here, so I do know that this was, again, like, this storyline is a straight up psychological thriller. I mean, this adversary character is a dick.
yeah for sure.
So
kind of scary though, like a scary,
absolutely. This is not the first episode where I would say this is as much psychological thriller slash horror. There's nothing childlike about these storylines. I mean, this is just straight. This is, you could take this and make this a real life scene and it would be a horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like point. Barbarian shit.
Yeah. Power. Yeah. What did you think about the drama with Forge and Storm and the adversary?
It was good. Yeah, this is where I was a big fan of the Life Death comic, as I mentioned in the last episode, and this is really veering into its own direction here.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll just go right into spoilers. So yeah, it's basically the story of Storm getting her powers back, and I thought it was well done. You're right, Mikey, it was a psychological horror. It really leaned into her like claustrophobia and overcoming your fears, and that was the key to unlocking her, getting her powers back and all that. So it really did lean into all that, and I would love to see the timing breakdown, because it just felt really fast. Like, it just felt like it flew by. It was just like this little sort of story tacked on or interwoven in the with this other episode that felt like the bigger story, like the Xavier story. And this felt like a cool sort of side story, little character moments, character story with Forge and Storm. So I really enjoyed it. I like their love story. It's like I said, like, it's straight from the comics, and I like the sort of theme of getting over your fears to sort of get your powers back. So I thought it was a well done little kid's psychological horror cartoon and in the end of it. So
good point.
What about you, Ian?
So I agree with you. And I think that, you know, if there was one thing where I was going to say, okay, I felt rushed, I would have to agree with you with this story from start to finish, like with Storm's side quest. I just felt like, where it was still interwoven, the whole thing did feel, when you compare it to, I know it's wildly different from what happens in the comics, but when you compare it to the issues that we spoke about and how like monumental they were for X-Men comics, it would have been nice to see them dip a little bit harder into this and do some more stuff with it, because I felt like reading the two issues back to back was more powerful arc for sure.
Yeah.
And this was a nice like taste of it. But in the fashion that with the rest of the show, to be fair, they packed a lot in each episode, and they got through this relatively quickly so that we could get Storm with her powers back into the fold. I understand that, but I do think it would have been nice if it felt like a little bit more weighted.
The part that threw me off is when she's taking care of him, he seems bedridden, all of a sudden the adversary starts messing with her, and motherfucker runs down the stairs like he's Doctor Strange. Spouting off spells, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, it came out of no setup whatsoever. I was like, what's going on?
send this owl demon back to the desert or whatever, and you think that it's all done with. But I think the point that I'm trying to make here is, like, basically she deals with the adversary, like you said, with a little bit of help from Forge, but she does it where she needs to get those powers to do it. So I thought it would be cool if it was more of a mental battle, if it kind of mirrored the comic even more, where even in the comics she doesn't end up with her abilities. It's not till a later arc she gets her powers back. So she's able to sort of conquer her own demons as a human.
Without powers,
but
yeah.
In this scenario, it's basically like her toying with the idea of being a human, but then coming back like as a mutant and being like, no, like still me, and like I'm defined by my powers essentially is what it was. But for me, I thought it would have been cool if like she somehow beat like the adversary mentally, and then maybe she could fly out and see what happened to Genosha, get enraged and get her abilities back or something like that. But I think like where we got to with her having her powers back is a pretty cool moment.
And the classic costume. She's now in her black and yellow, the white costume, which was cool, and her hair grew out and everything, and it was very, very Sailor Moon anime-esque, the transformation there.
I agree with that. Yeah, so, it was a cool moment for sure.
Yeah, I would say this about the, you know, this like has been the theme through all six episodes. A little too much relationship shit going on in these. Everybody's hooking up.
Soap opera. That's what it is.
Everybody's hooking up. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, so you've got Rogue hooking up with two different guys. You've got Scott Summers hooking up with the same woman twice, but different women. You've got, you know, Forge and like Storm don't even know each other.
Gene and
like,
Wolverine have a kiss.
Yeah, it's like, I forgot about that. You know, and then we've got this huge relationship. You've even got Jubilee and Sunspot trying to work a little something. It's like, just, you know what? I just want to see people beat each other up for a scene.
Oh, it's a good point. But Mikey, you actually made me think of another good point there, where you're saying that Storm and Forge should know each other. So I actually, like, I love the show, and I love any excuse to go back to it. I went back and started watching, like, the episodes with Forge, and it's so true. Like, they go into the future to meet Forge. He's older, and he never really interacts with Storm. The fact that they knew that, and the writers are able to still pull off these storylines where it's like, it still keeps with the continuity. It's crazy. So now I'm on a full X-Men the Animated Series rewatch, and I've started from season one now. I'm in season three, in the middle of the Phoenix Saga right now. So, it's been great.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay.
Before we wrap, though, we got to talk about the twist ending of this episode, because we got to talk about where it might be headed, right? So, because we're going to be covering, you know, every couple episodes.
Yeah.
Basically, it ends on the Bolivar Trask reveal that basically, like, Mr. Sinister needed his DNA to activate Master Mold and create this, you know, a gargantuan, what do you call it?
Godzilla
abomination.
Like, Godzilla Sentinel or whatever.
So Mr. Sinister is fully aware of all this and potentially manipulating the events of this to his own gain, but to what end? Because it seems like a weird move for Mr. Sinister to wipe out Genosha, but
it does. I really thought it was going the Cassandra Nova route. So when I saw this scene, and that it was, I guess, Sinister that was behind the Genosha attack. I am curious, as anyone else, I do not know what the end game for Sinister is. I don't know any comic reference that has him pulling the strings here. So I think it's going to go down its own path here, and I'm excited to see what
happens.
Seems
like it,
I mean, the one thing I'll say about Mr. Sinister is this, is from a cartoon design standpoint, he lends himself perfectly as a villain in a cartoon.
Yeah.
So I think they're just leaning into it at this point, because they're like, look, we only have so many episodes. Mm-hmm. Let's make Mr. Sinister the biggest dick and cram him, he just looks badass.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's great to bring back like a Nightcrawler, because he's all blue and, you know, put Storm in her, like, you know, just, you know, flowing outfit. I mean, you know, give the visuals, man. You know, that's why Wolverine in the classic yellow is always, it's like, just all of it, works. It works on such a visual level. And that's where this cartoon does a good job, is leaning into the visuals. I mean, you know, even the Charles in Space, you know, line, it's like, you know, everything's colorful and bright and vibrant. I mean, that's what we want more of.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the animation in the show is sick. Excited for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Any speculation? Any idea where these next episodes could be heading?
I don't know, like
forging its own
the fact
path.
That like the they only, do yeah sorry go ahead
well the only speculation I have is basically the teases we get from the changes in the opening credits, right? So we see a lot of like they're
yes,
changing it every
true.
Week like some of the scenes, and we see some flashes of Gambit and Apocalypse, and so I'm assuming, like you said earlier, we're gonna see more Cable. Sorry, I said Gambit, I meant Cable. We're gonna see more Cable. And we're gonna see some more Apocalypse, another classic villain from the comics. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there's a connection between Sinister and Apocalypse or something. So that's my guess.
Maybe
and
he's making Apocalypse for this.
Maybe,
for
yeah. Now. Apocalypse always finds a way to come back, especially in the show.
He's always seems to be in the future stuff. They even teased Nimrod, right? They've shown him in the but that's the thing is, like, I don't know if that we can trust those flashes as like what's to come, because also they just seem like they're pulling from like the classic
that's
first
the thing.
Five seasons.
I don't
know
if they're
reimagining
of
stuff.
Scenes from the original series. That's
because they had
I
the
thought.
Phoenix in there, right?
Yeah, the Phoenix in there. So it's true. Maybe it's just there to throw us off, right? Throw us off the scent. So.
Yeah, but they definitely seem to be building up Mr. Sinister as a big factor in all this, and so that's a cool Saturday morning cartoon vibe with like the ending, you know, always like, oh, what's gonna happen next week and stuff like that.
Okay,
so.
And they've also been really holding back on Wolverine. So my other speculation is we're gonna get a Wolverine, like at least half episode dedicated story coming up one of these days.
That'd be fantastic.
They've been really holding back, and I think I don't know what they're gonna do, but I think they're setting something up.
Yeah. So, man, I'm loving this show. There's four episodes left. Like, I was blown away most by Remember It. I think I'm always going to remember it. So that was like definitely a highlight for me so far. But everything else they're throwing at us with Professor X and everything else is making it really exciting to watch week to week for sure. Any final thoughts, Mikey, on the series overall and where we're headed?
No, it's great writing. It's great visuals. I don't even know where it's headed. I'm enjoying the ride. I really do feel like now maybe, you know, maybe a lot of the relationship stuff, it feels like a lot of those are closing up. I mean, those loops are closing. So maybe, like you said, maybe this is going to be nothing but like Wolverine just slashing his way through the last four episodes, which everybody's here for. So let's, you know, I think maybe that's it. Maybe they just wanted to give other people screen time for a while. But it really is funny. The stories, at least they seem to be focusing on in the characters, because I expected this to be a lot of Wolverine, and it's not. Yeah. And then it was a lot of Jubilee at first, and now she's gone. And so it's, you know, it's Magneto's gone, but he'll be back. And I hate to say it, I'm kind of glad Gambit's gone. He never did a lot for me.
That's why they featured him so heavily, because they knew what they were going to do with him, right? Yeah. They gave him his moment to shine. Yeah.
But I'm happy with everything as far as the direction. It's fun. It's the timing's right. I will say, especially like this episode, which didn't appeal to me on some levels. I think the writing's good, but I like, you know, whatever. It wasn't my favorite of the bunch, but you know, it's comes and goes so fast that, you know, it's not like you ever get bored, even when you're like, okay, I'm kind of done with it. So it's like, well, that's over.
I agree. Like, it doesn't overstay anything for sure. Okay, awesome. All right. I guess we'll wrap it up there. That's our episode of Back in My Day on episodes 5 and 6 of X-Men 97. So we'll look forward to getting to only four episodes left, Ian. That's crazy. So we'll look forward to getting to episodes 7 and 8 next time we convene. And Mikey,
and go listen to Multiverse of Badness, everyone, because there's some great comic reviews on a lot of X-Men related content too.
Yes,
so some great comics there, and your boy Swarm with Back in My Day on as guest. So go check out Multiverse of Badness anytime.
That's right. So Mikey, thanks a lot for joining us. Like Ian said, go check out Mikey's podcast, Multiverse of Badness. It's a great show if you love comic books, especially. Where else can people find you on the internet, Mikey? What else do you got going on that you'd like to plug?
Quickly, I actually have a horse racing game online, been online for a long time. It's at derbyfever.com. Go check that out. And the reason I say that is because I'm officially now a streamer instead of a podcaster. So come check us out at twitch.tv/derbyfever. You'll get to see me and my buddy drink a lot of beer and talk about fake horses.
Oh, so, I can't wait to do that for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If anybody comes over, let me know that you heard me on Back in My Day. I'll set you up with a starter package in the horse racing game. We'll get you started.
There you go. You heard it from the man himself. You're getting set up. at
the... set up. That's what happens. Yeah. All right. All right. That's great, man. So yeah, follow Mikey there. And what is it? Horse Derby Fever?
Derbyfever.com.
Derbyfever.com.
Or ehorseracing.com. It's technically the same site.
Cool.
Sweet. Branded right. differently for a couple of different reasons that I won't go into, but it has to do with legal issues that are, or let me, the contractual obligations that had to be closed up.
Those
but
damn contractual now, so obligations. Can, always yeah. getting in the way.
Yeah, now I can have them both. I can have my cake and eat it too.
Perfect. All right. Well, I am contractually obligated to say that you can find this podcast, Back in My Day, on any podcast app of choice. We are on social media at Day Back In. That's our handle on pretty much all the social media apps. And if you're enjoying the show and you want to help us out, leave a little 5-star rating on your app of choice, a review. That really helps. Tell a friend. Thanks for listening. Dave will be back and have a great day.
See ya. I made one note on this episode, and that was inferior freak fluids.
What?
That was the one thing I wrote down about episode 6.
Oh, that was a line. Oh, the yeah. show. Oh, that's great.
Inferior
oh, and
fluids.
The Milky Way ghetto was the other great line.
Yeah. All right.